You are Locked On Jets, your daily podcast on the New York Jets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome to the Locked On Jets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. It is Friday, May 25th, 2018. We are heading into a long weekend. I'm your host, John B. from GangreneNation.com. If you enjoy this show, subscribe to it. Your options to do so include iTunes and Spotify. And if you do enjoy the show, give it a good review in iTunes. We certainly appreciate that. As I mentioned the other day, we are going to start moving into a summer schedule beginning next week, which does not mean we are putting the podcast on hiatus. We'll still be doing shows, but we probably will be scaling down a bit from the normal 5 days a week, Monday through Friday. Now, we'd usually be off Monday anyway because it's Memorial Day, but the topics of discussion for the Jets are not numerous at this point of the year. You know, we are in the off-season program. Minicamp is coming up, but there's not a whole lot to talk about, so we'll scale things back a little bit. I'll get a little bit of rest. And next week, for example, I think we'll do something Tuesday and Wednesday. That's my plan, but I'm heading out to San Diego on Thursday. I'm actually going to meet my nephew. So it's very exciting stuff for me. So if you live out in San Diego and have any suggestions on things to do, I'd love to hear it. Please let me know. But starting next week, we'll scale things back a little bit, and we'll dive back into Monday through Friday at the beginning of training camp, as we've done in the past, as we did last year. So just a little programming note. Today, I wanted to discuss a topic that actually got into my mind from a really nice email we got from a listener named Richard, who lives out in the United Kingdom. He sent me a message. "Dear John, many thanks for your podcast. I'm a British Jets fan since 1978, the first time I ever saw NFL on British television. And of course, in the brief history of the Super Bowl they showed, one name stood out above and beyond all others. Yes, you guessed it, Broadway Joe. This, therefore, is my 40th anniversary as a Jets fan, and I'm hoping to mark the occasion with my first trip to the USA to watch my team," which is awesome, Richard. Really, really, really awesome stuff. That's an incredible fan. But anyway, Richard moved on. "However, my question to you is that it very much appears that this year's draft was a developmental one for the Jets as opposed to a plug-and-play draft, which one could argue was the objective of the Giants. Consequently, would it not have been better for the Jets to do the same thing? Take Quentin Nelson at 6, keep the second-round draft picks for this year and next, and look to draft a quarterback in 2019. Much has been made of the quarterback class of 2018, but as many have pointed out, they are not without their individual flaws, and it's not as though the 2019 class is lacking in talent. Don't get me wrong, all the tape I've seen of Darnold convinces me that he has what it takes to lead us to the promised land, but without the talent around him, I'm concerned the team is repeating the past mistakes. Just imagine 2019, the rookie comes in, and he's got Nelson, Ronald Jones, or Geis, plus Dallas Goedert, or Mike Gesicki, with 1 year of experience in the NFL." I'm sorry if I butchered those names. I should know them. I probably would have been able to name them a month or two ago as the draft was, we were leading up to the draft. And we've gone off the email. If you can't tell, I'm apologizing if I've pronounced any of the names of the draft prospects from this year. It's, you know, once the Jets don't draft you, you're out of my mind. Anyway, going back to Richard's email, "To me, those are real foundations to bring out the best in a young quarterback. Or was the decision made solely on the potential stellar lineup of defensive ends or defensive tackles in next year's draft? Again, once again, many thanks. And as a former sports broadcaster for Talk Radio Europe, I love your insight and passion for the game, and marvel how you always seem to keep the show so fresh and original. I used to cover 5 to 7 sports per show, depending on the season, and there were days I used to agonize about finding something new to say. So keep up the good work and good go Jets." And first of all, Richard, thank you very much. It's a very, very nice email. I certainly appreciate it. And you know, as I've said many times, it's a gift to be able to ramble on about a topic as narrow as the New York Jets, as long as I do. So, I think it's a gift. But anyway, so Richard I want to answer the question, but Richard's question also got me thinking about another topic. As far as should the Jets have not taken the quarterback this year, I think it's tough for a couple of reasons to not do that. is, first of all, a year out, we don't really know what this quarterback class next year is going to look like. Second, you don't get a shot every year to draft a good quarterback. So when you're there, you kind of have to take your shot. I'd say third, with with the idea of taking Nelson and maybe a tight end or a back, I understand the theory, and that was the theory, I think, behind what the Jets did in 2017 when they drafted Jamal Adams and Marcus May. They were trying to add pieces to the defense, maybe not necessarily directly helping the quarterback, but helping him by building the defense. And when you have a good defense as a young quarterback, it takes pressure off you because you don't have to score as many points to win the game. But I think you can do this every single year. You can say, well, next year will be the guy. Well, at some point, I think you do have to take the quarterback. I don't think it's a luxury you have to have the team built before the quarterback arrives. And the Giants did something like that. But I would say what the Giants did, and this is what I think, and perhaps I will be proven wrong. I thought the Giants have been very short-sighted in the way they dealt with Eli Manning. He is obviously 37 years old. And when your quarterback's 37 years old, you have to start thinking about the future. And even if that means taking a little hit this year, not adding a player who can help you this year, when you have a chance to find his replacement, find his successor, that's something you have to think about doing. Because the end is near with Eli. So I don't like what the Giants did. I think I actually think it's pretty short-sighted because you don't really know what you're going to do going forward. Now, the Giants, it's not to say the Giants are finished. Giants have a few chances here. They could, Davis Webb could develop into a franchise quarterback. Kyle LaLetta could develop into a franchise quarterback. They could also find one in the future. There are other ways they could find one. That's not guaranteed, though. If you're asking me behind door A, Sam Darnold, behind door B, either Davis Webb develops or Kyle LaLetta develops, or I find a chance to get a franchise quarterback in the future, I'd go with Dore. I'd go with Darnold. I'd go with the guy I think is, has a great shot at being a franchise quarterback. So I understand the arguments, and that's, it's an argument the Jets have used in the past. I just think that there comes a point in time where you have to take a quarterback, and when there's a guy as good as Darnold sitting in front of you, I don't think you can wait for the next time because these chances to draft a guy like that, I don't think come along too frequently. So thank you for your question, Richard. I certainly appreciate it. Richard's question got me thinking about the Jets' draft philosophy, and has it been a developmental one or a plug-and-play philosophy under Mike Maccagnan? And I think this year's draft is probably going to look more like a developmental one, where the Jets are drafting guys they think have upside who aren't quite there as players yet, who they're going to look to develop. And I think the reason for that largely is the lack of a second-round pick. And the reason I say that is once you get into the late rounds, you're drafting guys who are not good today. You really are drafting developmental players for the most part. And I go back to that stat I gave you yesterday from the article, I think it was in Forbes, that talked about the percentage of players who turn into long-term starters from each round. And in the first round, it's the odds are pretty good. The second round, it drops to like 1 out of 3. The third round, it stays at 1 out of 3. And then the fourth round, it drops to like 6%. And it's in the single digit percentage-wise the rest of the draft. And that's not to say it's exactly one third, but maybe it's 36%, maybe it's 37%, maybe it's 34% in the second or third round. You can argue here or there, but I think it gives you a good ballpark figure. And the only chances you really have are to the best chances you. Or I shouldn't say the only chances, because the good teams do tend to find contributors later on. But the best shot you have to draft a player, the rounds where you can, where you think there's a pretty good shot on finding a quality player here, are the first, second, and third round. So I wanted to take a look at what the Jets have done under Mike Maccagnan, and I want to take a look at each draft pick Maccagnan's made in the first, second, and third rounds, and see whether, this is totally subjective, and this is totally my take on it, so you may disagree with some of these players, but I'm going to categorize a player as either a guy who's kind of a safe pick, or a guy who's a developmental type of player. And by safe pick, I mean a guy whose game is fairly refined, and even if that guy does not necessarily have the highest ceiling, you know that his skill set's there, his tech, he's technically sound, stuff stuff, you know, stuff I'm talking about in that area. And let's jump in. So McCagnan's first draft was 2015, and Leonard Williams was his first pick, and I think that one was not a big... Look, all these players need to develop. Leonard Williams did have some technical flaws, but it was a safe pick. It was a pick where you went in knowing that Leonard Williams had a high floor, that at the very worst, unless he got hurt or something unforeseen happened, you were getting a good starter, a very good starter. So I think that one was a safe pick. And that was part of the calculus in picking Williams, I think. I think that was part of the rationale behind drafting Leonard Williams. Yeah, that's something that goes into it. It's not just upside, it's floor. It's what are the odds I'm getting a good player? What are the odds I'm avoiding a bust? So I think that one was a pretty safe pick. You go to round two that year, Devin Smith. That was an upside pick. That one was pretty clearly. He was a guy who was not refined in his route running. He was a guy who, you know, had shown some good deep ball skills in college, some good deep route running skills in college, but everything else needed work. So I think that one was pretty clearly an upside pick. The third round, Lorenzo Maldon, I would call that an upside pick. I don't think he was a guy they were expecting to go in year one and contribute right away. I think he was a guy who I don't think he had the biggest ceiling in the world, but I think that they were probably a little higher on Maldon than a lot of people were at the time. I don't think Maldon was ready to go in day one and be an NFL player. So I'd say that was an upside pick. So that's two upside picks for one safe pick so far versus one safe pick so far. So let's go to year two, 2016. Darren Lee, that was an upside pick. I think everybody knows his game was not exactly the most refined. Still is not. He was still kind of learning a new position at the time. So I think that one was pretty clearly a developmental pick that was made on upside. Round two, Christian Hackenberg, I think that one's pretty obvious. That was... I mean, we can argue about his actual upside till the cows come home. You know, did he have upside? But I think the Jets thought he had upside. He was pretty clearly a guy who struggled as a player in college, so that was an upside pick. Round three, Jordan Jenkins, that was a safe pick. That was the guy who it was viewed as a very high floor type of guy, a guy who did not need a whole lot of development to step into the lineup and play effectively. So that one was pretty safe. So through 2 years, we have two safe picks, three upside picks. Year three, Jamal Adams, I think that one was a safe pick. I think, you know, people thought, again, it was very similar to Williams, high floor type of guy. You knew he's probably going to be a good safety, so I'd say that's a safe pick. Round two, Marcus May, again, safe pick. Guy who was relatively older for an NFL draft prospect. They planned to plug and play him right away. He was able to step into the lineup, so safe pick. Round three, Ardarius Stewart. I think that one was an upside pick. He wasn't used a whole lot in Alabama's offense in college. You know, not a guy who needed to work on his route running a bit. So I think that one was a developmental pick, an upside pick. Now let's look at this year. Sam Darnold. Look, we all know that they wanted him for the upside, but I think they viewed him as a safe pick. I think that's one of the reasons they drafted him is I think everybody views his game as fairly, I think at least everybody in the Jets organization views his game as fairly refined, so I'd have to put him as a safe pick. And Nathan Shepard, that's an upside pick. Whenever you draft a small school defensive lineman, I think You're hoping for the best. I'm not going to totally rule out the possibility Shepard can contribute as a rookie, but I'm not sure that's necessarily something the Jets are counting on. I think that's why they made a deal for Henry Anderson. That was part of the thinking, is you don't want to pressure Shepard because sometimes it's a transition coming from a small school to the NFL. So that gives us, as far as I can see, that gives us five safe picks. They are Williams, Jenkins, Adams, May, Darnold, and six upside picks. Those are Smith, Maldon, Lee, Hackenberg, Stewart, Shepard. I think I miscounted. I may have miscounted at some point, maybe after a year or two, but five, six. So pretty even mix for the Jets. So I think philosophically, and this was not really Richard's question, but it was my own question. Are the Jets focused more on drafting safer picks or upside picks? And it seems like it's a mix of the two under Mike Maccagnan. So that's the question I answered, I guess, for myself after I answered our good friend Richard's question. That'll do it for our show today. Thank you for listening. This has been the Locked On Jets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. If you enjoy this show, subscribe to it. You can do so on iTunes or Spotify, and leave the show a good review in iTunes. Have a great long weekend. Be safe if you're traveling. We'll talk again on Tuesday.